Today is Thursday, April 3rd, 2025. We have six cases on our calendar today for our set for oral argument via Zoom. This is being live streamed and it is being recorded, and an oral recording of this hearing will be available within the next day or two for the parties and the lawyers. However, no other recording of this proceeding is permitted. Counsel for appellant, you will have 15 minutes to start your oral argument, and counsel for respondent, you will have 15 minutes for rebuttal, and then 5 minutes for 15 minutes for your arguments and 5 minutes for rebuttal. And we will be beginning with the very first case set for oral argument. That is A24-1332, Discover Bank versus Leon Weichman. And if I mispronounce that name, my apologies in advance. Feel free to correct me when you introduce yourself. Counsel for appellant, when you begin, please state your name for the record and the party you are representing. And same for respondent, when you begin, please state your name for the record and the party you are representing. So with that, one final item is we do have the clock in one of the squares. So please be mindful of the time that you have to stay within the time allotted. And with that, counsel for appellant, you may begin.
John Mack for appellant. No one should have to pay for a debt that they never incurred when they informed the creditor that they had not incurred that debt. First, there's evidence that Mr. Weichman did not incur that debt, but before I go into it, I submit that the summary judgment in this case was premature. At least there should have been some back and forth discovery once my client answered and submitted an affidavit saying that he had informed Discover Bank that he did not make the payment.
But Mr. Mack, he didn't respond to any of the requests for admissions. And one of the challenges there is if you don't respond to a request for admission, it's deemed admitted.
But one of the problems with that is, first of all, that isn't the basis upon which the court made the summary judgment findings. The second matter is ordinarily when this happens, those have to be filed and there has to be some information. If I was late on this, I obviously would have made a motion to have it answered. I don't know what happened here. I may even have gotten and made a request that we have an extension of time, but I don't know what happened here. This was not the basis of the judge's decision, though. So I think
so that's you, not important. Following up on Judge Reyes's question, I think you just argued that there should have been more discovery before the district court considered the summary judgment motion. Did you raise that argument to the district court that there wasn't an adequate period for discovery?
I don't know if I raised the argument that there was not an adequate period, but I do think I raised to the district court the issue that it was not ripe for a summary judgment because there was much more that needed to be done.
Thank you.
Now, take a look at the affidavit in this case. The last payment made to Discover by my client was January 13th, 2020. The $5,000 charge was made in 2022. Note that there were no hits on his card from 2020 to the date when the charges for which he is being sued were incurred. And there were no charges in the interim. Mr. Weichman said he had not used or had a Discover card since 2020, and this is checkable. Mr. Weichman's bank account shows no activity for 3 years with Discover. When Mr. Weichman disputed the debt, Discover card had a duty to investigate. See,
when did he notify Discover card?
I believe sometime in late 2022. But that hadn't been fleshed out yet.
So that was 2 years after the charges
were incurred? The $5,000 debt was incurred in 2022. And my client indicated, although we hadn't fleshed it out yet, that he informed Discover Card that that this was not his debt in late 2022.
Where in the affidavit did he say that he notified them in 2022?
He said he notified them. He did not indicate when as of that date.
So
Again,
that date is missing from the affidavit then.
that date is missing from the affidavit.
So we don't have the when in the affidavit. And it
Other than
also the
a
affidavit also indicates that it says, quote, someone else was making unauthorized charges on this account. So do we know who was making the unauthorized charges?
no, and I don't think anybody does other than the unauthorized user.
Okay, and then also in addition to missing the who and the when, it also says, I informed Discover Card that someone was making unauthorized charges on it. We don't know the when. Do we know how he contacted Discover Card?
No, again, that's a matter that would have been fleshed out in discovery.
But it wasn't part of the affidavit.
No, but we know that when it was after the $5,000 charge was incurred, because he certainly wouldn't have informed Discover Card until he got notification that he had a $5,000 debt that he didn't incur.
So didn't the district court rely on the fact that the affidavit was a general averment without any substance? We don't know the who, we don't know the when, we don't know the how.
Well, that isn't important yet because obviously this was thin, but it's a preliminary shot in the lawsuit. And that would have been fleshed out in depositions or it would have been fleshed out in further discovery. But I think it's enough to put the onus on the re respondent in this case to indicate by their records, okay, when did we hear from them? Because we hadn't shot out affidavits yet, and we hadn't
How do
shot out
you know,
discovery.
but Mr. Mack, how do you know what to look for if you don't even know what when the allegation is that he informed Discover Card, but Discover Card doesn't know how he informed them, and Discover Card doesn't know when he allegedly informed them.
But how do we
What
know? How
record?
do
I
we know
mean,
that? I
I'm
had
sorry.
not yet set out discovery. I obviously would have asked them in the interrogatories, do your records indicate that my client, in fact, informed you that somebody else was making, and they may have a record of it. I suspect they would.
But it doesn't your client have a duty to provide, and don't you have a duty to provide the information that he has in terms of what date he informed Discover Card? Who did he talk to at Discover Card? What did he tell them? And when did he contact them? Did he contact them once? Did he contact them several times? I mean,
Yeah, but when
there's
does,
nothing
I'm
there
sorry.
to put Discover Card on notice. What happened when?
But when does he have that duty? The answer is that he probably has a duty at some point when Discover Card asks him for that information if they don't have it. But the problem is, I'm not even sure that my answers to interrogatories were due. I certainly got no notice under Rule 115 that my answers were late, or that they were going to file the answers, or that they were going to make a motion to compel. So if
But
they had obviously
but
credit.
counsel, as the non-moving party, when the moving party files for summary judgment, as a non-moving party, there is a responsibility at that point to put specific facts that show there are issues of material fact. And that's where the district court dismissed this case because it said that affidavit is too general.
But the answer is that it is not too general saying that I informed them of it, I paid, I can show that I had no charges, and I have a bank account showing no indication of any payments made to Discover Card in 2021, 2022, or 2023. I don't think that that's too general to be a problem. This is the beginning of a lawsuit. You can get more general later, but all we have are averments from Discover
Mr.
Card.
Mack, with regard to that argument, the case law says that self-serving affidavits that contradict other testimony generally are not sufficient to create a fact issue for trial. And this affidavit that you're pointing us to consists of a paragraph. There's no date about when he allegedly informed Discover Card that he was contesting the charges. He claims to have had no discovered card since about 2020, but he doesn't provide any records or documentation to support that. And you consider, so we have this affidavit that's lacking in any dates or specificity. And then we also have the request for admissions, which were not responded to, that specifically asked your client whether that he or an authorized user made all charges or took the cash advances, which compromised the current balance outstanding with Discover Card. And there was no denial of that or no response. So under the rules, that is deemed admitted, and yet and there, you know, there's other admissions there too. So I guess I'm wondering why the affidavit doesn't constitute the type of self-serving affidavit that the Mountain Peaks case says isn't sufficient to create a fact issue for trial.
First of all, with respect to the fact that my client hasn't used the Discover card since 2020, what more could he say? If he lost the card, he may not have noticed it. He certainly, it's not a general allegation saying that I haven't used the card. His bank accounts tend to show that, and certainly he has knowledge of whether he had the card or not. So what more could he say? Well, he might have known more, and if we commenced discovery a little bit more, maybe he could have found it, but he didn't. The other thing about being deemed admitted, there was never anything in the record indicating that the admissions were deemed admitted. Ordinarily, if you're going to make requests for admissions and the other person does not respond in time, you make a motion to have the matter deemed admitted. If I was late, I wasn't all that much late, and I needed at least, and this is fair, I get on the stick card. None of this was done. None of the requests for production of documents or for interrogatories were filed, and none of them indicated under Rule 15 that I was late. So I think these are not general allegations. What more could we say? Well, we might have said more, but that's what interrogatories are for, and that's what requests for admissions are. The automatic...
Well, Mr. Mack, I just want to stop you there on the request for admission, and I'm looking at the district court's order for summary judgment. The district court said Discover served discovery requests, including requests for admissions on Weichmann on August 10th, 2023. Then the district court goes on to say Weichmann made no response. Then the district court says, quote, the matters are deemed admitted because Weichmann did not respond or object to the admissions within 30 days after service of the request, and cites to Minnesota Rules Civil Procedure 36.01. Isn't that a determination by the district court?
It's a determination in the summary judgment motion, though. It isn't a determination that they're deemed admitted to give the other side an opportunity to raise the issue that they should be reopened. So
well,
I think,
but there was no response within 30 days. That's the time that appellant had to respond, and appellant didn't respond. So under that rule, then by operation of law and as a district court determined, those requests for admission are deemed admitted
but
under Rule 36.01.
If the court takes a look at the case law on requests for admissions, the court will find that they're very easily overcome if the other side makes a motion saying that they should not be deemed admitted.
There was a motion made to deem them not admitted.
No, because there was not a motion made to deem them admitted.
So that is inapplicable here then, correct?
Pardon me?
So then that argument is inapplicable here then, right?
I think the argument is applicable in this case, because I think if you're going to have a request for admissions deemed admitted, it is up to the party asking for them to be deemed admitted to make a motion to have them deemed admitted before they are used in a summary judgment motion.
And why can't the district court sua sponte say, look at it and say, under the rule, there's no response within 30 days, so they are... The court finds that they are admitted.
I don't have a problem with the court doing that if it does it in advance of the summary judgment motion. But if it's doing it at the same time that the summary judgment motion is made, the non-moving party doesn't have an opportunity to make the kind of motion where they are deemed non-admitted. And I didn't have that opportunity.
What rule or case law supports that argument?
There are about five cases, and I didn't have an opportunity to brief that, that talk about the opportunity to find them not deemed admitted. And Minnesota has been very liberal on that. I don't find a single case in the case of Minnesota. It doesn't apply to this case because that new, issue didn't come up. But they say all you have to do is say, oop, we made a mistake on this, and they are not deemed admitted. I think it's very problematical for a person to have incur a $5,000 debt on something that he never bought and on something that the company didn't really do anything for over a year once it had the $5,000 debt and my client tells them this isn't mine. Then they finally sue him. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. And you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. We will now turn to respondent. You will have 15 minutes. The clock is set. Please state your name for the record, the party you are representing. You may begin.
Thank you, Your Honor. Julie Landy on behalf of Discover Bank. This case presents what we believe is a simple issue for this court. The facts are largely undisputed with the addition of the requests for admissions. The first is that Discover had a credit account with defendant had Discover a credit account with Discover. Second, there were charges of over $5,000 made on that account, and there was no payment made. And third, Discover mailed those statements to appellant, and appellant did not object to the charges until this litigation commenced. When we look at what the district court did, we first ask whether summary judgment was proper. And Discover brought a claim for an account stated. And I believe, as this court well knows, there are three elements to an account stated claim: a prior relationship between a debtor and a creditor, mutual assent between the parties as to the correct balance of the account, and a promise to pay. Each of those elements were satisfied here. As to the.
Also,
Yes, Your Honor.
with regard to the first element, a prior relationship as debtor and creditor, appellant argues that there wasn't a relationship at the time these charges were incurred. Can you address that argument? Does there have to be evidence of a relationship at the time the charges were incurred, or can the prior charges that are, appellant doesn't dispute that he had a Discover card and paid charges through 2020. Is that sufficient?
I believe it is, Your Honor, and I haven't seen anything suggesting that it wouldn't be. There's a card member agreement, which is part of the record, and there's nothing in that agreement or nothing that I've seen that would suggest that the relationship between the parties somehow would just stop out of thin air. And of course, when you think about it, that kind of can't be how it works, because what period of time would there be that passes that all of a sudden there's no creditor relationship just because appellant here would say so? If I have an account with American Express or US Bank, I can't just say after 2 months I've decided that there's no relationship that continues. And of course, what we see here is that there were continued charges on this account over the period of time. Now, of course, appellant says that he didn't make those, but that objection, as far as we can tell in the record, was not made until a long period after, as far as we can tell, until the litigation was commenced. And such an objection is just too late under the various case law in Minnesota. And I think when you put all of that together, there has to be a continuing relationship between the creditor and the debtor in a case like this.
But counsel, on that point that you raise in the affidavit, it does say, I informed Discover Card that someone was making unauthorized charges on it. I received no response except this lawsuit. So it at least the affidavit, I mean, it's thin, but it does say the response I got from Discover is the lawsuit, which implies that the notice given was prior to the lawsuit.
It's possible. I agree with you. I think that the statements in the affidavit are quite thin. We don't know when or how or who the appellant allegedly contacted. It's possible that it was the wrong number. It's possible that it went to the wrong place. We don't know based on the information provided, and it certainly would have been possible for appellant to provide substantially more information in this affidavit and provide the sorts of details that Minnesota courts say are required. But when you look at the type of information that was provided here and you compare it to what is a large amount of case law, the best case I think is actually the Fagerty and Benson case. The type of information that you have here is just too little to create a genuine issue of material fact, especially at the summary judgment stage. So that gets us through the first element, and just to make sure that I've covered that, the creditor-debtor relationship, I think you can see in the answer, which admits that there were cash advances made and there were charges in the bank statements that were submitted that shows a continuing course of payment, and in those requests for admissions that were deemed admitted by the district court. And in fact, I think it appears that appellant has agreed, at least for some period of time, there was a relationship here.
Counsel, I wonder if you could address appellant's argument that the requests for admission were only deemed admitted at the summary, or I should say, in the summary judgment order, weren't deemed admitted prior. And I'm
Sure.
understanding the argument to be that, it's basically a lack of due process because appellant wasn't put on notice that those requests for admission were going to be deemed admitted.
So, thank you, Your Honor. A couple of responses to that. The first is this is the first that I am hearing of this particular argument. It wasn't raised in the briefing, it wasn't raised below. This cases that I understand my adversary to be citing to, I haven't seen those, so I don't know exactly what they say. So I don't think that issue is properly before this court. But beyond that, kind of when I just am thinking about it here in front of this court, it appears to me that there isn't a due process issue for a number of reasons. The first one being that, as the district court found, these requests for admissions were sent to appellant and there was no response. As I read just the rule itself, that's what's required. And if there is no response, then the matter is deemed admitted. But beyond that, and secondly, I think there are many opportunities for a litigant below in a situation like this to raise that issue. So I was not counsel in the case below, so I'm not, I didn't wasn't involved in every detail, but I don't see any reason why appellant here couldn't have said to the court, "Hey, I don't think I got those. I need more discovery," or "Please don't deem them admitted," citing the case law that he says exists today, again, that I haven't seen. So I think that there would have been an opportunity for those issues to have been raised at an earlier time if there really was a problem with the court deeming them admitted at the summary judgment stage. But now that we're here and it hasn't been raised previously, I don't think it would be appropriate for this court to go back and undeem those admitted or something like that.
Does the rule require a party to file a motion to have unanswered requests for admissions deemed admitted?
That's a good question, Your Honor. I am not aware of such a requirement. I don't believe I've ever done that in my practice, but sitting here today, I don't know of any rule requiring that, I think is the best answer that I can give you.
Yeah, it seems to me rule 3601 just says it's admitted.
Exactly. That's what I've been focused on and looking at. Again, this issue wasn't briefed, so it's not something that I've, gone into great detail on, but my reading of the plain rule itself is exactly the same as yours. And in my, years of practice, I've never experienced or seen either, I've brought or somebody brought against me that type of motion. Going to the second element that we think was stated here was a mutual assent between the parties. Here you have, and I think the district court relied on this, that Discover sent statements to appellant here at the same address as the bank account statements that appellant provided as part of the briefing. And so you can see that appellant was receiving these statements over a period of time showing that the amount was due. And then a promise to pay the amount. And there, that's the third element. And there we have the evidence of the request of admissions, the fact that the address is the same, and that the only evidence of disputes that we have is when he answered the complaint in February of 2023. As this court has discussed for a long time today, we believe that the district court was correct, that the vague and self-serving affidavit wouldn't create a genuine issue of material fact. And that's because it contradicts the admissions in the RFA. It's far too general, as this court has said, and it contradicts appellant's own bank statements that shows some payments that were made in 2021. Finally, I just wanted to note briefly that it appeared to me, although I wasn't 100% sure, that appellant might be arguing that he was entitled to a defense under the Fair Credit Reporting Act, and that somehow that was an additional reason that summary judgment was improper. I would just note for the court that that issue was not considered by the district court. It wasn't raised at the district court. His answer lacked any such affirmative defense, and the RFA said that no such defense was being submitted. Even if it somehow was proper before this court, I don't believe it is. I think what he's quoting from is the Fair Credit Reporting Act, but that section only applies to disputes that are provided from a credit reporting agency to a furnisher, which would be Discover, and there's just nothing in the record whatsoever suggesting that there was something from a credit reporting agency to Discover such that that statute wouldn't even apply. Unless the court has any further questions, I have nothing further.
I don't see any. Thank you very much. We appreciate your arguments. We will turn back to appellant, and you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
First, if you would look at my client's payment history with Discover, it's obvious that he was making payments every month to Discover and that he was current until January of 2021. So it's pretty clear that this was not an irresponsible debtor. It's also, and I may be wrong about this, so I'm not going to say that I'm clearly right on this, but if I read the record correctly, there was one $5,000 charge made against this during the period of time when my client says he didn't have a Discover card. So it's entirely possible that he did in fact inform them. The other thing that bothers me about this case is that Discover card didn't do anything for a year while the charge was being made, and apparently made no effort to get a hold of my client and talk about this issue until they sued him. So it seems to me that using this excuse that he didn't answer properly is just charging him with a debt that he didn't incur. And I think that it's up to Discover Card, once they're told that, look, I didn't make this card, to make some inquiry, either of him or its own records. They didn't. So my client should prevail. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We appreciate arguments from both of you and the briefs. The case has been submitted, and we will be issuing an opinion within the 90-day statutory timeframe. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.